Chapter number 6, and we are going to be looking at verse 15. And I need someone who will read verses 15 through 19. Who will do that? Okay, Isaiah, you're up. That was pretty impressive with those big names there. I know some folks that would get to those big names and say, skip. And so super impressive. So you see in verse number 15, the wall is finished. It's been going on for a few months now. I've heard it said that there is roughly 2 miles of wall around that area. How many of you have been to that place, Old Mount Zion, Old Jerusalem? The Huberts, the Moores, the Rosinskis, Joan, Dot, Glenn, the Kerrigans, the Creightons. Does it seem like it's reasonable to say that that would be about 2 miles all the way around that wall? Okay, so what if it's half right? We know there's a lot of distance between 1 and 2 miles, but even if the commentators are wrong, it's not exactly 2 miles. Think about what we're saying. 2 miles, mile and a half of wall building, when there was so much rubbish in the way to begin with, and they did it in how long, according to verse 15? 52 days, yes. And in 52 days of the 6th month of the Jewish year, I might add, which is Elul. And that will matter later in our reading. What else can I show you here? Ah, yes. Let's talk about verse 17 quickly before we read a few more verses. This guy named Tobiah. Now, can you remind me the ethnicity of Tobiah? And if you're looking for... what? If you're looking for some help, you might find it in 219, 6-1, 6-12, 6-1, 219. An Arab. An Ammonite. Remember, we talked back in chapter 2 where the Ammonites came from. About 1,500 years earlier, they are the offspring of Lot and one of his daughters. Yes, you heard me right. The Bible can tend to be not squeaky clean a little bit, can't it? So if you're new to the Bible in here tonight, be aware it is real writing, which means no one cleaned it up. That means you can trust it. No one took away the black eyes off of the Bible characters. You have in this chapter someone being named as a descendant of Lot and one of his daughters. And you'll notice in verse 17, who are the people in verse 17 that are writing letters to him? Yeah, nobles of Judah, people from within the wall potentially. All right, and let's see, what else do I want to tell you about this guy? Oh yeah, you would think that an Ammonite, Tobiah means Jehovah is good. So when you're interviewing people and you're wondering, is this person trustworthy? Here's a guy you would interview and you would find out his name means God's good. God is good. You ever met anyone that says, too blessed to be stressed? God is good. And that turns out in the workplace, they are absolute snakes. You ever met anyone like that? So there's more to a person's life than the meaning of their name. All right, I need someone, some brave soul, to read verses 1 through 5 of the next chapter. We're going to go over here to Denny Rosinski. We might be back over there. Go ahead, Denny.
Then it was, when the wall was built, and I had hung doors, when the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites had been appointed, that I gave charge of Jerusalem to my brother Hanani. And Hananiah, the leader of the citadel, for he was a faithful man and feared God more than him. And I said to them, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. And while they stand guard, let them shut and bar the doors. And the prophet from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, one at his watch station and another in front of his own house. Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not rebuilt. Then my God put it to my heart to gather the nobles, the rulers, and the people, that they might be registered by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of those who had come up in the first return.
Okay, and then I need someone. Who wants to volunteer to read verses 6 through 73? Anyone? Just kidding. So, we've already read it, and I'll explain that in a minute. We've already read those verses. We did it on the night of a picnic when we did some baptisms. I had a cookout, I think, a Memorial Day weekend. Well, I'll explain that in just a minute. But let's answer some questions together. Let's answer some questions. As you look at verse number 16, what is the result of the enemies of Nehemiah and the people of Jerusalem? What is the result of them knowing that the work was done by God through these people in 52 days? What'd you say, Leah? All right, they are disheartened. Now I need someone over here, maybe Yosef, you wanted to speak a little earlier, but we'll help you if there's any trouble. If anyone will compare the end of verse 16, compare it to verse 9, and tell me what's ironic about the enemies of Nehemiah being afraid. Anyone?
They were trying to make Nehemiah, his people, fearful and scared again. God made them scared as they continued to walk 52 days.
Okay, so do you, everyone hear Charles? That is exactly what we're saying. In verse number 9, the enemies of the builders were stirring up stuff, spreading rumors, trying to weaken the hands or the heart, trouble the heart, makes their heart sick. We've already been told that if we can make your heart sick, you'll quit working. You know, Proverbs says, a weary heart dries the bones. So that means, David said, Psalm 32, my moisture has gone out of my bones. He's saying my guilty conscience and the way that I feel about my conduct has weakened my heart. Here, it's something different. In verse 9, the enemies of Nehemiah have been trying to make the builders' hearts afraid. And here in Jerusalem, when the walls are completed against all odds in 52 days in verse 15, you see that it causes in verse 16 the enemies of Nehemiah to be afraid because now God's involved. What's the takeaway for us? Can you think of one?
Well, Nehemiah prayed.
Yes. Yeah, great. So they're tempted to be afraid in verse 9. And at the end of verse 9, Nehemiah's praying for strength. God, strengthen our hands. And by the end of verse 16, God did help them. You see, the work was done by God. And it disheartened the eyes of those around them, the nations around them. Good. Okay. Now, I want you to please to look at verse number 18. And I want you to look at the issue there. If you're Nehemiah and you know what verse number 17 and 18 says, verse 17 and 18, in those days, after the work is done, right? So since the walls are done, okay, life is going to get sweet. There's no more trouble, right? And then you realize According to verse 17, there are nobles of Judah. Maybe some inside the walls, maybe some outside the walls. But the point is, they're supposed to be on Nehemiah's team here. And they're sending letters to an Ammonite. We already identified this guy, Tobiah. He is not a Jew. And they're sending letters to him. How long do you think we should assume that Tobiah, an enemy on the outside, was actually getting help from people on the inside? What'd you say, Joseph? Probably from the beginning. Yeah, I think that's correct. The entire project. Let's take a look and see who this guy Tobiah is related to. These big names that Isaiah fought through, this Isaiah over here, not the one in the Bible, you see that Tobiah is a big name. And why? Verse 18 tells us. Why is Tobiah so close to some of the high muckety-mucks in Judah? It tells us he's related. He was a son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Arah. All right, let's look at 3:29. Can you tell me in your own words, looking at 3:29, who Shechaniah is, and you'll find out who Tobiah's father-in-law is. So we have the keeper of the east gate of the city married his daughter off to Tobiah the Ammonite. That's super comforting. We have someone that's supposed to be helping us build the wall and watch the gate, and he is actually the father-in-law of one of the chief antagonists. Let's look further in 6:18. He had a son, Jehonoan. Tobiah has a son, Jehonan. And he married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. So, Tobiah is the son-in-law of one of the magistrates of Judah. And Tobiah's son is married to the daughter of a man named Meshulam. Look in 3:4 and 3:30 and tell me who Meshulam is. Yeah. What do we think about him? What does that verse tell us about him? So these are fellow wall builders. Friends, fellow wall builders who are in charge of a section of the wall between these two towers. They are fellow wall builders, and they're marrying their daughters off to foreigners who are going to be antagonizers of Nehemiah. So let's review. Why are these schmucks in the middle of the city sending letters to Tobiah? Why? Because Tobiah, although he's an Ammonite, he's the son-in-law of a noble of Judah who's supposed to be watching the east gate. And Tobiah's son is the son-in-law of some nobles of Judah. How noble? In charge of rebuilding one of the sections of the walls. Would you feel double-crossed if you were Nehemiah? Some of these people that are supposed to be helping you on the inside are writing letters, sit reps, we'd say in the military, situational reports, updates, out to one of the chief antagonists. Now, the terrible thing about this is Nehemiah doesn't have a clue. Let me show you how I know that. Look back at chapter number 2. Remember, this is 400 years before Jesus comes to earth. Look at chapter 2. And you're going to see in verse number 19, back 2 months ago, 52 days or so, whatever 52 divided by 7 is, just under 8 weeks ago, you have in verse 19 of chapter 2, the same Tobiah the Ammonite. And he comes to Sanballat and Geshem the Arab. They heard of it. Of what? Verse 18, they planned to rebuild the walls. They heard of it. And they, that's Tobiah and his ilk, laughed at us and despised us and said, "What's this thing you're doing? Will you rebel against the king?" Talking about Artaxerxes. Verse 20, Nehemiah says, "So I answered them and said to them, 'The God of heaven himself will prosper us. Therefore we servants will arise and build.'" Now listen to what he says to Tobiah. "But you have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem. Okay, what does it mean to have a memorial somewhere? An honor, a name. If we say you don't have a memorial somewhere, it means your name won't be remembered. Here's what Nehemiah says to Tobiah the Ammonite. You got no part in the city. No one even knows your name. Was he correct? No, we just looked at it. It was nowhere close to correct. He is the son-in-law of one of the nobles of the city, and he married his son to one of the nobles' daughters in the city. As a matter of fact, what we're trying to tell you is, as bold and heroic as Nehemiah's words are in chapter 2 and verse 20, chapter 6 and verse 18 is showing us he's wrong. They had a lot of claim in the city. He told them, none of y'all business, head your way. And it turns out they had a lot of business in the city. To the point where when they're done building the walls, people are sending them notes and updates. Man, how would that serve you as Nehemiah? Wouldn't that be disappointing? Go ahead, Dot. It doesn't look like it. It looks like they were against building the walls because in chapter number 6 and verse number 18, it says, chapter 6 and verse 16, the enemies heard of it and the nations around us. So it appears that Sanballat, Tobiah, and the Arab guy that was mentioned in that triad, seems like they're outside the city. And you have nobles of Judah who were named as being particular builders of the wall, and their family with the antagonist. Don't you love it when you get into a nepotism situation at the job and you realize that you're working for a 22-year-old because his dad owns the joint? But he has a bachelor's degree. Andy?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out these nobles. Why are they... So they know Tobiah definitely does not want the wall built. They're undermining it.
Yes.
Why are they participating in building?
By the way, very punny there that you use undermine when it comes to building a wall. That was good. So I have a theory, and it's based on chapter 5. Andy poses a good question. Why all this undermining of Nehemiah's work? And why, to use the very official dictionary word, cahoots? Why are they cahoots with Tobiah about undermining Nehemiah's work? What do you remember from chapter 5 that clues us into the answer? What do we remember about the economic status of most of the people in the area? Terribly poor. How poor? They're selling their kids. So, when you realize that Tobiah the Ammonite has married into a couple of these noble families, why do you think that there are friends within the city undermining the work of Nehemiah in favor of Tobiah?
They don't want to give back things.
Yeah, maybe their whole life is funded by Tobiah the Ammonite through marriage. What a dirty world. All kinds of secret stuff going on. And then we get to chapter 6 and verse number 19. And we realize that they're sending secret emails. You can see in verse number 19 of chapter number 6, they reported his good deeds before me and reported my words to him. Tobiah sent letters to frighten me. Do you remember letters being sent to Nehemiah previously? Chapter 6, verse 5, right? So it's not just that he has to deal with people and secrets. He's got to deal with these little do you love me check yes or no notes being sent between adult males on either side of the wall. Just nonsense everywhere. And then we get to chapter number 7 and we have the opening verses read. And basically to get to it, I want us to look at this and see that when you see in chapter 7 and verse 3 that there are particular instructions on when the gates should be open and shut, and then you look and see in verse 4 that the residents of the city are fewer than one would hope. Why do you think he wants the gates shut and opened at specific times?
Keeping people
Okay, traffic control, what else? Say again? In what way would keeping the gates shut most of the time protect the city? Right. Right. And verse number 4 tells us they didn't have enough guards to go around the clock. See that? So that introduces potentially a problem. How do we find out how to get more people into the city? And there is where verse 5 comes in of chapter 7. We're going to look and see who belongs where. Who came back anyways 12 years ago with Ezra? So, hold your place here. Hold it, though, because you're going to look at it. And look back one book to Ezra chapter number 2. And I want you to notice how similar they are. Ezra chapter number 2. I want you to notice verses 2, basically, to verse number, well, basically the end of the verse. Verse 67. Ezra chapter 2, verses 2 through 67. Usually people don't say, I'm looking for something good to read. Let's go ahead and just start with the book of Ezra. So the truth is, Ezra and Nehemiah are tough for a few reasons. Not because we can't find life lessons. If you've been paying attention at all, there's tons of life lessons. If you don't have enough guards to guard the gates of the city, shut the gates. It's super easy. And you know when to open them when you start breaking a sweat out in the garden. That's what he said in chapter 7, verse 3. You know, you open the gate as soon as the sun is hot. Well, that's I can work with that. That's pretty good counsel. So that's resource management as leaders. You can work 20% of the people to do 80% of the work, but eventually they're all going to quit on you, right? You can run a horse hard and you can run it in the rain, but don't put it away that way, right? And there's a lot of wisdom here, but we want to get to Jesus. And that's the challenge, is seeing the whole reason, Bible-wide, what in the world is Ezra doing here? All right, so we'll see if we can find that. But first, did you notice how similar Ezra 2, verses 2 through 67 is to Nehemiah 7, verses 6 through 69? They're pretty similar. So when it says in Nehemiah chapter 7, verse 5, I went to go look for the register, he probably, in today's language, went and got the book of Ezra. That's not what I mean exactly, because we don't know what shape the book of Ezra was exactly at that point. But he probably went and borrowed the genealogy of Ezra. Now, I already know they're not exactly alike, but the bottom line is the same between the two. If you will look at chapter number 6, Ezra chapter number 3, verse 64, and Nehemiah chapter number 7, and verse 66. Yeah, forgive me, 2. Ezra 2, thank you. Ezra 2, 64, and Nehemiah 7, 66. So the bottom line of these two records is identical. The new numbers adding up to those numbers vary between the books. And without spending the rest of our time explaining why that is, it's one simple explanation is that some were added on subsequent trips and some returned or some died. Another is a recounting. But the point I want you to see is they came away with the exact same number of people that came over with Ezra 12 years earlier. All right, so now we're back in Nehemiah 7, and we're looking at verse 70 through the end of the chapter. We're almost done. Nehemiah 7, verse 70, and so let's review what we've talked about tonight. We're 440-some years before Jesus comes to earth. They finished building the walls around Jerusalem, right? We are now trying to find enough people to live inside the city. That's the point of the genealogy. Verse 4 of chapter 7 of Nehemiah says, there's not enough people living inside the walls. Then, chapter 7, verse 70, some of the heads of the father's houses gave to the work. The governor gave to the treasury 1,000 gold drachmas, 50 basins, 530 priestly garments, Some of the heads of the fathers' houses gave to the treasury of the work 20,000 gold drachmas and 2,200 silver minas. And that which the rest of the people gave was 20,000 gold drachmas, 2,000 silver minas, 67 priestly garments. Why? Here it is. The first word of verse 73 tells us why. So the priests and the Levites, the gatekeepers, the singers, some of the people, and Nethinim, and all Israel dwelt in their cities. If you're going to have people who are supposed to look after the temple living in the city, they have to have a livelihood. You have to pay them to man the temple. It's a lot of Levites that takes to man the temple. So they took up an offering. This should sound familiar. It should sound a lot like Sunday morning. And so they take up an offering that is calculated in verses 70 through 72, and now we're going to fund it. And look at the closing verse of chapter 7. When the seventh month came, the children of Israel were in their cities. Now this matters, and the reason it matters is because we're going to see that there is some seventh month stuff in the next chapter. Okay, but pause, gather yourself. What month of the year was the wall completed? Chapter 6, verse 15 says it's the 25th day of Elul. And you probably have a study Bible that tells you what month of the year that is. Anyone? Pretty much August or September, but the Jewish New Year begins between March and April, whenever the moons shift. So we're talking about the sixth month of the year is when the walls are completed. And the closing reference in chapter 7 is the seventh month came and everyone is settled where they're supposed to live. So at the beginning of chapter 7, we have a problem. Not enough people living in the city. By the end of chapter 7, everyone who should live in the city does. It seems so simple, like what in the world is this about? Well, there's a few things you can give thanks for tonight. One, you actually read Nehemiah 7. You read the part found in Ezra 2 in May on a Sunday night at a picnic. Do you remember that? I remember it. And so chapter number 7 of Nehemiah is behind us now. And you know that big old long chapter with 1,000 names has a function. And it was supposed to tell you where everyone was supposed to live. Particular cities in Jerusalem and Judah. Okay, let me pause here and just remind us why this matters in the Christ picture. We talked about a month ago why this matters. Just a reminder. Jesus has to die in this city. He has to be tried in this city by Herod. He has to be tried in this city by Pilate. He has to go outside these walls to die and fulfill Old Testament a picture of Christ dying outside the camp. That is by far the best answer I can come up with why is Nehemiah even in the Bible? Because here we are, big closing. I wish I could have pulled this out of you. We had so many verses, I wasn't able to ask all the questions I wanted. Big picture, don't forget, we already saw the end. Jesus dies outside these walls as a picture of a leper dying outside of the camp. We talked about that already. Why do we need him in Jerusalem? Way on back here, about 1900 BC, 1500 years earlier, Abraham was told to take his son Isaac to Mount Moriah, right? Mount Moriah, right here. And after he attempted to offer Isaac his son on the altar, the angel of the Lord interrupted him, didn't he? And instead of offering Isaac on the altar, come on friends, stay with me. Instead of offering Isaac on the altar, what was provided for him to offer? A ram. And he finished that by saying his name is Jehovah Jireh, the Lord provides. And then he said, for in the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. So, remember, Abraham told Isaac, God will provide himself a lamb. 10 verses later, in the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. So, we're expecting in Genesis 22 that one day God will provide a lamb on Mount Moriah. And here is how we get that done and fulfill Old Testament prophecy of Jesus dying outside the walls north of Jerusalem. That's where it starts in Genesis 22, 1900 BC. And Jesus, we're told in John 19, carried his cross and went outside and died outside the city. We looked at Hebrews 13, where it says, as Christ died outside the gate, let us also go unto him and suffer outside the gate, bearing his reproach. So that's the big why about Nehemiah. It will be a long time before we study Nehemiah again. We will come back and hit chapter 8, but it's later in our trip with Moses. Is there a closing question? Denny?
This really, it's a picture story to me, where all, in this story, you know, they're trying to scare the people, they're sending letters, telling lies, trying to attempt them from building the wall. Well, it's similar to our current situation where there are all kinds of lies being told within our government, and our government is trying to scare the people. But we are called to build the kingdom, and we must persist because God is going to do what God is going to do.
Oh, that is super good. I hope everyone gets it. We're going to pray. Frankie, be ready to pray. You have your prayer ready? Okay, good. Friends, I hope you just heard what he said. It is super helpful. Today, you're building the wall. And you hear through a thousand sources why you should be afraid. I think it's a little strange that in 22 months, we've gone from thou shalt hide for 2 solid weeks to just keep an eye on your symptoms for 5 days. What in the world? So fear of if your mammy gets this, she's gone for good. That was an attempt to get people to stop laying block. Right? Christians are just different in how we handle these things. Russia's on the border with the Ukraine. What do we do, Paul? Just put another block on the wall. But don't you think we ought to stop and weigh this thing out a little bit and think through this and meet again and then meet again and then maybe meet some more and then meet again about meeting? Meet again about our meeting and then keep meeting about our meeting? We don't want to get carried away with building walls when there's so much danger out there, and it's the attempt of the wicked one to weaken our hearts and to stop building. Isn't that right? Very good. You're going to get me all cranked up, and it's already past 7:30. Let's all stand together. Frankie, would you pray and ask God to bless us on the way home?